Now, your host, Michael Cohen, with a Capital City Recap on More Compelling Talk Radio, 1320 WILS.
And we're back. Michael Cohen with producer Desi Simmons. Just about 24 hours left before the deadline on UAW Big Three automaker negotiations. Although it appears the talks are moving along without hesitation, to talk about where they stand and what the UAW will likely walk away with, I'm joined by Kristen Dechek, director of the Labor and Industry Group for the Center for Automotive Research in Ann Arbor. Welcome to the program, Kristen.
Thank you for having me.
So UAW workers at GM and Chrysler can't even strike at this point since they agreed not to do so as part of the bankruptcy deals. Where does that leave them? How much leverage do they have when it comes to bargaining?
Well, a strike was very unlikely this year anyway, at either company, I believe. There's just, you know, there's a whole lot of reasons why the union and the company would like to avoid that sort of situation. And we haven't had a national strike at the UAW and the Detroit 3 for 35 years. There have been local dust-ups, but nothing that took the whole company out.
From reading the news reports, you'd think that negotiations were going along swimmingly. Is there any chance that they're a little more contentious than we know?
I think that there are some difficult issues, but I think, you know, what's very different this time is there are really practical, pragmatic people at the table who are, you know, really just, you know, trying to get to the best agreement they can. You know, a tentative agreement that doesn't ratify isn't a contract, so they both understand where the, you know, the other side is coming from and where they have to get to. So I think, you know, it's really, they're not doing this sort of marathon bargaining game where they, you know, I can stay awake longer than you can thing to sort of force agreements on issues. It's just, it's a whole different style this time around.
Now, healthcare costs appear to be a big factor for the automakers. What kind of changes are likely to come out of these talks when it comes to what workers pay for their healthcare?
I don't expect that there'll be huge changes in this area. There's only one automaker, Chrysler, who indicated that healthcare costs and cost share by the employees would be something that they wanted to see some changes in. The other two were looking at, you know, containing costs and nibbling around the edges and not real major changes.
When you look at the negotiations that are occurring with GM, Chrysler, and Ford, I guess if we look at GM first, can you give me a sense of what the most significant issues are in that particular negotiation?
I think that the two main things, and the things that are often the last to settle, are the core economic issues. So this year it's, you know, looking at enhanced profit sharing or perhaps gain sharing, how they're going to perhaps adjust the second-tier wages upward, and still maintain cost competitiveness with all the producers here in the U.S. And then the other side is job security, and job security through product placement and product commitments. And we saw a lot of that in the 2007 agreement that the UAW's strategy was to go for product and investment commitments versus, you know, some other, you know, contractual language around job security.
And when you're talking about higher wages and more profit sharing for workers, I'm sure that's something workers are pushing for, but are these automakers in the position to really provide that now?
Well, what they're looking at doing is structuring something that's much more flexible. So not rolling into a base wage that the automakers have to pay in good times and bad, but paying out a share of the profits when there are profits and not when there aren't. So that's, you know, a flexibility and a, you know, a way of adjusting wages up and down as well as employment up and down in slacker times. So, you know, when if you had wages steady and your output drops, then, or your profits drop, you have to drop employment. And this way, you know, wages and employment can flex.
I see. Well, I guess that could be a good thing or a bad thing. I'm talking to Kristen Dechek. She's the director of the Labor and Industry Group for the Center for Automotive Research in Ann Arbor. I know Ford has been doing incredibly well. I wonder, in terms of workers at Ford, are they likely to see raises and additional benefits as a result of these talks?
I think, you know, Ford almost necessarily has to go last in these negotiations. And we saw news just this afternoon that Ford has indefinitely extended their contract deadline. So they're continuing to talk. Their talks are at a much slower pace than the other two. And I think that's partly, you know, they want to see what happens at Chrysler and GM and structure a deal for Ford that is cost competitive for the company, but that does allow the workers to share in Ford's much greater success than we've seen at GM or Chrysler. Ford workers also have this equity of sacrifice grievance that's pending, and that the hearing is scheduled for Thursday, the day after the contract was to expire. And what that's about is there were reinstatements of cuts that were made to salaried workers, and the equity of sacrifice grievance is that those things were not reinstated for the hourly workers. That's a mechanism to give the Ford workers a little bit more. In this contract.
I mean, are unionized workers then likely to get some of that back then?
I think that they will get some things back, yeah. I don't know that they'll get everything. I mean, pattern is a pattern for a reason, and it's not just the union likes a pattern agreement, but the companies benefit by having basically the same playbook and the same rules that they play by with their other unionized competitors.
What about the situation at Chrysler? Is the company and its UAW workers facing any unique challenges that GM is not?
You know, Chrysler is still, you know, they're at a scale that it's very difficult to maintain, and this tie-up with Fiat that's pending is really going to help them get to a scale where they can do product development on a global scale. You know, Chrysler has to put out a full line of vehicles and do all the engineering and product development for much lower volumes in a much smaller company and many fewer employees. So it's getting to a scale with Chrysler that Fiat really offers them. And I think they did not have a profit-sharing payout. They had a bonus payout this year because they're not yet profitable. They have many more second-tier workers at Chrysler, so they're able to have much, much lower labor costs within the structure of the current agreement. Chrysler's just a little bit different than the other two because of its size and being much smaller.
And now we're going to be seeing signing bonuses likely. How much are workers going to be getting, do you think?
You know, it's tough to guess where that's going to end up. I had a reporter tell me it's going to be this, this, and this. And I said, oh, really? I ought to call Bob King and tell him that because I don't think he knows yet. It's part of the complicated, core economic puzzle that they're putting together right now. I mean, signing bonuses versus annual performance bonuses versus how do they enrich the profit sharing formula versus are there annual wage increases or a return of COLA. All of that is part of a big puzzle, and you can't say, signing bonuses will be this if you don't know all the rest of it. That said, I think it's instructive to look at, past signing bonuses were around 3,000, and most of the workers have foregone lump sums in 2010 and 11 that would have amounted to about 5,000. So I think 3,000 to 5,000 on the bottom end is really, where we would be looking. And, there's been all kinds of speculation of much higher than that. I think that's, it's not useful to speculate in that area. And, just because a proposal has been passed across the table doesn't mean that's where they are.
It seems like the deadline is not going to be met when it comes to the negotiations. Is there any real visibility or any real sense of where the negotiations are and how close both sides are to coming to an agreement?
Not really. This is it's been very quiet. People like myself were looking for some of that information to come out as well. It's been a very, very quiet session and season. And I think, they haven't settled all of them on the deadline ever. Mm-hmm. And just looking back at, the past 20 years or so of contracts, on average, they settle the first one about three and a half days after the first, the deadline. And then the next one goes a couple weeks, two or three weeks after that. And then we see the third one on average coming in about a month after the deadline. So in past rounds of negotiations, that's how it's gone. We have seen just in 2003, Ford and Chrysler settling one day after the deadline and GM 4 days after the deadline. So it's not always this dragged out process, but it was very condensed in 2003, and we might see boom, 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 just like that again. But I look to history, and history tells me 3 days, 15 days, 30 days.
Kristen Dechek, director of the Labor and Industry Group for the Center for Automotive Research in Ann Arbor. Thank you so much for joining me.
You're very welcome.
Come.